This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Never Never Part 3, written by Colleen Hoover and Taryn Fisher, performed by Elizabeth Evans and Kevin R. Free. Chapter 1. Charlie. The first thing I notice is the pounding in my chest. It's so fast, it's painful. Why would a heart need to pound this hard? I breathe deeply through my nose and open my eyes on the exhale. Then I throw myself back. Luckily, I'm on a bed, and I tumble onto a mattress. I roll away from the man staring intently at me and land on my feet. I squint at him while backing up. He's watching me, but he hasn't moved. This eases the pounding in my chest a little. A little. He's young. Not quite a man, maybe late teens or early 20s. I have the urge to run. A door. I need to find a door. But if I take my eyes off him, he may... Who the hell are you? I ask. It doesn't matter who he is. I just need to distract him while I find a way out of here. He's quiet for a moment as he sizes me up.
I was about to ask you the same thing, he says.
His voice makes me stop shuffling sideways for a few seconds. It's deep. Calm. Deeply calm. Maybe I'm overreacting. I make to answer him, which would be the reasonable thing to do when someone asks you who you are. But I can't. I asked you first, I say. Why does my own voice sound so unfamiliar? I raise a hand to my throat and wrap it around my neck. He hesitates.
I don't know.
You don't know? I say in disbelief. How could you not know? I spot the door an edge closer, keeping my eyes on him. He's on his knees on the bed, but he looks tall. His shoulders are wide and pull against the t-shirt he's wearing. If he comes at me, I doubt I'd be able to fight him off. My wrists look small. Look small? Why don't I know that my wrists are small? This is it. I have to do it. I dart for the door. It's only a few feet away. If I can get it open, I can run for help. I scream as I run. It's blood-curdling, a real ear sore. My hand wraps around the knob, and I look back to see where he is. He's in the same spot, his eyebrows raised.
Why are you screaming?
I stop. Why aren't you coming after me? I'm right in front of the door. Technically, I can open the door and run out of here before he's even off the bed. He knows that, and I know that. So why isn't he trying to stop me? He passes a hand over his face and shakes his head, sighing deeply.
What's your name?
He asks. I open my mouth to tell him it's none of his business, and then realize that I don't know. I don't know what my freaking name is. In that case, Delilah?
Delilah?
He asks. It's pretty dark, but I swear he's smiling. Yeah? Is that not good enough for you? He shakes his head.
Delilah's a great name, he says. Listen, Delilah, I don't know exactly what we're doing here, but right behind your head there's a piece of paper stuck to the door. Can you pull that off and read it?
I'm afraid that if I turn around, he'll attack me. I reach a hand back without looking and feel around. I pull the piece of paper off the door and bring it in front of my face. Charlie, don't open this door yet. That guy in the room with you, you can trust him. Walk back to the bed and read all the notes. They'll explain everything. I think it's for you, I tell him. Is your name Charlie? I look back up at the guy on the bed. He's reading something, too. He looks up and holds a small white rectangle toward me.
Look at it,
he says. I take a step forward, and then another, and then another. It's a driver's license. I study the picture, and then his face. Same person. If your name is Silas, who is Charlie?
You are,
he says. I am?
Yes.
He bends to pick up a piece of notebook paper from the bed.
It says so right here.
He holds the paper out to me, and I hand him back his driver's license. Charlie isn't a girl's name, I say. I start to read what's written on the pages, and everything else falls away. I drop heavily to the edge of the bed and sit down. What the hell? The Silas guy is reading too. His eyes trace over the paper he holds in front of his face. I sneak looks at him while he's reading, and when I do, my heart beats a little bit faster. I read more. I grow more and more confused. The notes are supposedly from me and this guy, but nothing makes any sense. As I'm reading, I grab a nearby pen and copy the paper I found on the door, to see if I really did write it myself. The handwriting is a perfect match. Whoa, 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 I say. This is nuts! I put the page down and shake my head. How can any of this be true? It's like reading a novel. Lost memories, fathers who betrayed their families, voodoo. My God. Suddenly I feel like I want to barf. Why can't I remember who I am? What I did yesterday? If what these notes say are true. I'm about to voice this when Silas hands me another sheet of paper. You only have 48 hours. Do not focus on why you can't remember things or how weird it all feels. Focus on figuring this out before you forget again. Charlie. It's my handwriting again. I'm convincing, I say. He nods. So, where are we? I turn around in a full circle, noticing the freshly eaten food on the table. Silas points to one of those little paper tents on the nightstand. A hotel. In New Orleans. Great. I'm walking toward the window to take a peek outside, when there's a knock at the hotel door. We both freeze and look in that direction. Who is it? Silas yells at the door. It's me! A voice replies. Silas motions for me to go stand on the other side of the room, away from the door. I don't. I've only known myself for a few minutes, but I can tell I'm stubborn. Silas unlatches the deadbolt and pulls the door open just a little. A scruffy brown head bobs around the door. Hey, the boy says. I'm back, 11:30 sharp, just like you said. He has his hands stuffed in his pockets, and his face is red like he's been running. I look from him to Silas and back to him. They look alike. You know each other? I ask. The younger look-alike version of Silas nods his head. We're brothers. He says this loudly while pointing first to Silas and then himself. I am your brother, he says again, looking at Silas.
So you said,
Silas says with a slight grin on his face. He glances at me, then back at Landon.
Mind if I take a look at your ID?
The boy rolls his eyes but pulls a wallet out of his back pocket.
I like that cool rolling your eyes thing you have going on,
Silas says as he opens the boy's wallet. What's your name? I ask him. He tilts his head, narrowing his eyes at me.
I'm Landon,
he tells me, as if I should know this.
The better-looking Nash brother.
I smile weakly as Silas looks over Landon's ID. He's a good kid. You can tell by his eyes. So, I say, looking at Silas. You don't know who you are either? And we're trying to figure this all out together. And every 48 hours we forget again?
Yeah, he says. Sounds about right.
This feels like a dream, not reality. And then it hits me. I'm dreaming. I burst into laughter, just as Landon hands me a sack. I think my laughter caught him by surprise. What's this? I ask, opening the sack.
You asked me to bring you a change of clothes.
I look down at the gown I'm wearing, and then at the clothes. Why am I wearing this? He shrugs.
That's what you were wearing last night when Silas found you.
Silas pushes open the bathroom door for me. The clothes have tags on them, so I pull them off and begin to change. A cute black top with long sleeves and jeans that fit like they were made for me. Who gets new clothes in their dreams? I love this dream, I yell through the bathroom door. When I'm finished changing, I swing open the door and clap my hands together. All right, boys, let's go. Where to?
Chapter 2. Silas. I make a quick check of the hotel room as Charlie and Landon file out. I grab the empty trash sack out of the small can under the desk and shove all of our notes into it. When I'm certain I have everything, I follow Charlie and Landon outside. Charlie is still smiling when we reach the car. She honestly thinks this is a dream, and I don't have the heart to tell her it isn't. It's not a dream. It's actually a nightmare, and we've been living it for more than a week now. Landon climbs inside the car, but Charlie waits for me by the back door. You want to ride in the front with your brother? She asks, forming air quotes with her fingers. I shake my head and reach around her to open the door. No, you can ride in the front. She begins to turn when I grab her arm. I lean down to her ear and whisper, You aren't dreaming, Charlie. This is real. Something is happening to us and you need to take it seriously so we can figure it out, okay? When I pull back, her eyes are wide. The smile is gone from her face and she doesn't nod. She just gets in the car and closes the door. I claim my spot in the back seat and pull my phone out of my pocket. There's a reminder set on it, so I open it. Go to the police station first, get the backpack, and read every note and journal entry you can as fast as you can. I close out the reminder, knowing I'll get about 5 more reminders in the next 2 hours. I know this because I remember setting every single one of them last night. I remember writing all the notes in this small hotel trash bag that I have clutched tightly in my hand. I remember grabbing hold of Charlie's face right before the clock struck 11 o'clock a.m. I remember whispering never, never to her, right before I kissed her. And I remember 10 seconds after our lips touched, she pulled back and had no idea who I was. She had no memory of the last 48 hours, yet I remembered every single minute of the last 2 days. I just couldn't tell her the truth. I didn't want to scare her, and making her believe I was in the same situation as her seemed to be the more comforting option. I don't know why I didn't forget this time, or why she did. I should be relieved that whatever the hell has been going on with us seems to be over for me, but I'm not relieved at all. I'm disappointed. I would rather have lost my memory again with her than to have her be alone in this. At least when we were in it together, we knew it was something we could work out together. What seemed to be a pattern has now been broken, and I feel like this just makes it even more difficult to figure out. Why was I spared this time? Why was she not? Why do I feel like I can't be honest with her? Have I always shouldered this much guilt? I still don't know who I am or who I used to be. I only have the last 48 hours to go by, which isn't much. But it's still better than the half hour of memories Charlie has. I should just be honest with her, but I can't. I don't want this to scare her, and I feel like the only comfort she has right now is knowing she's not alone in this. Landon keeps glancing back at me, and then looking at her. I know he thinks we've lost our minds. We sort of did lose our minds, but not in the way he's thinking. I like him. I wasn't sure if he'd show up this morning like I asked him to, since he's still doubtful. I like that he doubts us, but his loyalty to me trumps his reasoning. I'm sure very few people have that quality. We're mostly quiet on the way to the police station until Charlie turns to Landon and glares at him. How do you know we aren't lying to you? She asks him. Why would you even humor us unless you have something to do with what's happening to us? She's more suspicious of him than she is of me. Landon grips the steering wheel and glances at me in the rearview mirror. I don't know that you both aren't lying. For all I know, you're getting a kick out of this. 90% of me thinks you two are full of shit and have nothing better to do. 5% of me thinks maybe you're telling the truth. That's only 95%, I pipe in from the back seat. That's because the other 5% of me thinks I'm the one who's gone crazy, he says. Charlie laughs at that. We pull into the police station and Landon finds a parking spot. Before he turns off the car, Charlie says, Just to be clear, what do I need to say? That I'm here for my backpack? I'll go in with you, I tell her. The note said everyone thought you were missing and that I was suspected in your disappearance. If we go in together, they'll have no reason to pursue anything further. She gets out of the car, and as we're walking into the police station, she says, Why don't we just tell them what's going on? That we can't remember anything. I pause with my hand on the door. Because, Charlie, we specifically warned ourselves in the notes not to do that. I'd rather trust the versions of ourselves we don't remember than trust people who don't know us at all. She nods. Good point, she says. She pauses and cocks her head to the side. I wonder if you're smart. Her comment makes me chuckle. There's no one in the lobby area when we walk in. I approach a glass window. There's no one behind the desk, but there's a speaker, so I press the button next to it, hearing it crackle to life. Hello? I ask. Anyone here? Coming, I hear a woman yell. A few seconds later, she appears behind the desk. Her eyes grow alarmed when she sees Charlie and me. Charlie? She asks. Charlie nods, wringing her hands together nervously. Yeah, she says. I'm here for my stuff. A backpack? The woman stares at Charlie for a few seconds and her eyes drop to Charlie's hands. The way Charlie is standing makes her look nervous, like she's hiding something. The woman tells us she'll go see what she can do and she disappears around the desk again. Try to relax, I whisper to Charlie. Don't make it look like I forced you to do this. They're already suspicious of me. Charlie folds her hands over her chest, nods, and then brings her thumb to her mouth. She begins to bite the pad of it. I don't know how to look relaxed, she says. I'm not relaxed. I'm confused as hell. The woman doesn't return, but a door to our left opens and a uniformed officer appears in the doorway. He looks over at Charlie, and then me. He motions for us to follow him. He walks into an office and proceeds to sit behind his desk. He nods at the two chairs opposite him so we both take a seat. He doesn't look at all pleased when he leans forward and clears his throat.
Do you realize how many people we have looking for you right now, young lady?
Charlie stiffens. I can feel the confusion roll off of her. I know she's still trying to grasp what's happened in the last hour, so I answer for her. We're really sorry, I say to him. His eyes remain on Charlie for a few seconds and then slide to me. We got in a fight. She decided to disappear for a few days to process everything. She didn't know anyone would be looking for her or that she would be reported missing. The officer looks bored with me.
I appreciate your ability to answer for your girlfriend. But I'd really like to hear what Ms. Winwood has to say.
He stands, towering over us, and motions toward the door.
Wait outside, Mr. Nash. I'd like to speak to her alone. Shit.
I don't want to leave her alone with him. I hesitate, but Charlie places a reassuring hand on my arm. It's fine. Wait outside, she says. I look at her closely, but she seems confident. I stand up a little too forcefully, and the chair makes an awful screeching sound as it scoots backward. I don't look at the officer again. I walk out, close his door behind me, and begin pacing the empty lobby. Charlie emerges a few minutes later with a backpack slung over her shoulder and a smug grin on her face. I smile back at her, knowing I never should have doubted that her nerves would get the best of her. This is the fourth time she's started from scratch, and she seems to have made it through the first few times okay. This time shouldn't be any different. She doesn't sit in the front seat this time. When we approach the car, she says, "Let's both sit in the back so we can go through all this stuff." Landon is already annoyed that he thinks we've carried out what he thinks is a prank for so long, and now we're forcing him to chauffeur us around. "Where to now?" Landon asks. "Just drive us around until we figure out where we want to go next," I say. Charlie unzips the backpack and begins rifling through it. "I think we should go to the prison," she says. "My father might have some sort of explanation." "Again?" Landon asks. "Silas and I tried that yesterday. They wouldn't let us speak to him."
"But I'm his daughter," she says.
She glances over at me as if she's silently asking for my approval. "I agree with Charlie," I say. "Let's go see your father." Landon sighs heavily. "I can't wait till this is over," he says, making a sharp right out of the driveway of the police station. "Ridiculous," he mutters. He reaches for the radio and turns up the volume, drowning us out. We begin pulling items out of the backpack. There are two separate stacks I remember making a couple of days ago when I first began going through these items. One of them is useful to us, one is not. I hand Charlie the journals, and I begin sorting through letters, hoping she doesn't notice I'm skipping some of the ones I know I've already read.
"All these journals are full," she says, flipping through them. "If I wrote this much and this often, wouldn't I have one that's current? I can't find one from this year."
She makes a good point. When I was in her attic taking all of this stuff, I didn't notice anything that looked like she was actively using it. I shrug. "Maybe we missed it when we grabbed all of these." She leans forward and talks over the music. "I want to go to my house," she says to Landon. She falls back against the seat, clutching the backpack to her chest. She doesn't continue going through the letters or journals. She just quietly stares out the window while we approach her neighborhood. When we arrive at her house, she hesitates before opening the car door.
"This is where I live?" she asks.
I'm sure she wasn't expecting this, yet I can't reassure her or warn her about what she'll find inside because she still believes I lost my memories too. "Do you want me to go inside with you?" She shakes her head.
"That's probably not a good idea.
Our notes said you should stay away from my mother."
"True," I say.
"Well, the note said we found all this stuff in your attic. Maybe check your bedroom this time. If you had a journal you actively wrote in, it's probably near where you sleep." She nods and then exits the car and begins walking toward her house. I watch until she disappears inside. I can see Landon watching me suspiciously in the rearview mirror. I avoid eye contact with him. I know he already doesn't believe us, but if he finds out I have any memory of the last 48 hours, he'll definitely think I'm lying, and then he'll stop helping us. I find a letter I haven't read yet and begin to open it when the back door opens. Charlie tosses a box inside the car, and I'm relieved to see she found more stuff, including another journal. She slides into the car when the front door opens. I glance in the front seat to see Jeanette joining the party. Charlie leans over until our shoulders are touching.
"I think she's my sister," she whispers. "She doesn't seem to like me very much."
Jeanette's car door slams shut, and she immediately turns around in her seat and glares at me.
"Thanks for letting me know my sister is alive, asshole."
She faces the front again, and I catch Charlie suppressing a laugh.
"Are you serious?"
Landon says, staring across the front seat at Jeanette. He doesn't seem at all pleased that Jeanette is tagging along. She rolls her head and groans.
"Oh, come on,"
she says to Landon. It's been a year since we broke up. It's not going to kill you to sit in the same car with me. Besides, I'm not staying home all day with loco Laura.
Holy shit, Charlie mutters. She leans forward. You two used to date?
Landon nods.
Yeah,
but it was a long time ago, and it lasted like a week. He throws the car in reverse and begins backing out.
2 weeks,
Jeanette specifies. Charlie looks at me and raises an eyebrow.
And the plot thickens,
she says. I personally think Jeanette's presence will be more intrusive than helpful. At least Landon knows what's going on with us. Jeanette doesn't seem like she would take something like this very well. She pulls a tube of lip gloss out of her purse and begins applying it in the passenger mirror.
So where are we going?
To see Brett, Charlie replies nonchalantly as she rifles through the box in the back seat. Jeanette spins around in her seat.
Brett? As in Dad? We're going to see Dad?
Charlie nods as she pulls out her journal.
Yes, she says. She looks up at Jeanette. If you have a problem with that, we can take you back home.
Jeanette clamps her mouth shut and slowly turns back around.
I don't have a problem with it, she says. But I'm not getting out of the car. I don't want to see him.
Charlie raises an eyebrow at me and then settles back in her seat, opening the journal. A folded letter falls out and she begins to open that one first. She inhales a breath and then looks at me and says,
Well, here we go, Silas baby. Let's get to know each other.
She opens the letter and begins to read. I open a letter I've yet to read and settle into my seat as well. Here we go, Charlie baby.
Chapter 3. Charlie. Charlie baby. My mom saw my tattoo. I thought I'd be able to hide it for a couple of years, but damn it if I wasn't taking off the bandage this morning when she walked into my room without knocking. She hasn't walked into my room without knocking in 3 years. I think she assumed I wasn't home. You should have seen her face when she realized what I had done. The tattoo alone was bad enough. I can't imagine what would have happened had she realized it was a representation of you. Thank you for that, by the way. Hidden meanings of our names was a much better suggestion than actually tattooing each other's names. I told her the strand of pearls was a symbol of the pearly gates of heaven or some shit like that. After that explanation, she couldn't argue much, being as though she's in church every time the doors are open. She wanted to know who did my tattoo since I'm only 16, but I refused to tell her. I'm surprised she didn't guess, because I'm pretty sure it was just last month that I mentioned Andrew's older brother was a tattoo artist. Anyway, she was upset, but I swore to her I wouldn't get another one. She told me to make sure I never take off my shirt in front of Dad. I'm still a little shocked we both went through with it. I was half kidding when I said we should do it, but when you seemed excited, I realized how serious I was. I know people say to never get a tattoo in honor of someone you're in a relationship with, and I know we're only 16, but I just don't see anything ever happening in this life that could make me not want you all over my skin. I'll never love anyone like I love you. And if the worst is to ever happen, and we do grow apart, I'll never regret this tattoo. You've been a huge part of my life for the 16 years I've been alive, and whether we end up together in the end or not, I want to remember this part of my life. And maybe these tattoos were more of a commemorative thing than an assumption that we'll spend the rest of our lives together. Either way, I'd hope that 15 years from now, we will look at these tattoos and be grateful for this chapter in our lives, and there won't be an ounce of regret, whether we're together or not. I will say, I think you're much tougher than me. I was expecting to have to be the one to calm you down and reassure you that the pain was only temporary, but it turned out to be the other way around. Maybe mine hurt more than yours. Okay, it's late. I'm about to call you and tell you goodnight. But true to form, I had to get all my thoughts out to you in a letter first.
I know I've said it before, but I love that we still write letters to each other. Texts get deleted and conversations fade. But I swear, I'll have every single letter you've ever written me until the day I die. Hashtag snail mail forever. I love you. Enough to camouflage you into my skin. Never stop. Never forget. Silas. I glance across the seat at Silas, but he's engrossed in his own reading. I would like to see this tattoo in person, but I don't feel comfortable enough yet to ask him to take off his shirt. I flip through more letters until I find one I've written to him. I'm curious to see if I'm half as in love as he seems to be. Silas, I can't stop thinking about the other night when we kissed, or your letter explaining how you felt about it. I'd never kissed anyone before. I didn't close my eyes. I was too scared. In movies, they close their eyes, but I couldn't make myself do it. I wanted to know if your eyes were closed and what your lips looked like when they pressed against mine. And I wanted to know what time it was so I could always remember the exact moment we had our first kiss. It was 11 o'clock, by the way. And you kept your eyes closed the entire time. After I left, I went home and I just stared at the wall for an hour. I could still feel your mouth on mine even if you weren't there anymore. It was crazy, and I don't know if that's supposed to happen. And I'm sorry I ignored all your phone calls after that. I didn't mean to worry you, I just needed time. You know that about me. I have to process everything, and I have to do it alone. And you kissing me was something that definitely needed processing. I've wanted this to happen for a long time. But I know our parents are going to think we're crazy. I've heard my mother say people can't really be in love when you're our age. But I don't think that's true. Adults like to pretend that our feelings aren't as big and important as theirs, that we're too young to really know what we want. But I think what we want is similar to what they want. We want to find someone who believes in us, who will take our side and make us feel less lonely. I'm so scared that something will happen, and it will change the fact that you're my best friend. We both know there are a lot of people who call themselves your friends and then don't act like it. But you've never been that way. I'm totally, like, rambling. I really like you, Silas. Like, so much. Maybe more than green apple cotton candy and the pink Nerds and even Sprite. Yeah, you heard me. Charlie. It's sweet. I was sweet. A girl falling for a guy for the first time. I wish I could remember what the first kiss felt like. I wonder if we did more than just kiss. I flip through more letters, scanning over each of them. I come to one with a word in it that catches my eye. Dear Silas, I've been trying to write this letter for like 30 minutes, and I don't know how to say any of it. I guess I just have to find a way, huh? You always say things so well, and I'm always the tongue-tied one. I can't stop thinking about what we did the other night. That thing you do with your tongue. It makes me want to pass out just thinking about it. Am I being too honest, showing my cards? That's what my dad always says to me. Don't show people all of your cards, Charlie. I don't have any cards that I want to hide from you. I feel like I can trust you with all of my secrets. Silas, I can't wait for you to kiss me like that again. Last night after you left, I had all of these irrational, angry feelings toward every girl on the planet. I know that's stupid, but I don't want you to ever do that thing with your tongue to anyone else. I don't feel like I'm a jealous person, but I'm jealous of anyone you've wanted before me. I don't want you to think I'm crazy, Silas, but if you ever look at another girl like you look at me, I'm going to gouge out your eyes with a spoon. I'd also possibly murder her and frame it on you, so unless you want to be a blind prison mate, I'd suggest you keep your eyes on me. See you at lunch.
Love you, Charlie. I blush at that one and sneak a glance at Silas. So I stick the note under my leg so he can't read that one. How embarrassing, doing that with someone and not remembering it. Especially since he's apparently so good at that thing with his tongue. What thing? I sneak another look at him, and this time he's looking at me too. I immediately feel hot all over.
What? Why do you have that look on your face?
What look? I ask, looking away. It's then I realize that I don't know what my face looks like. Am I even nice to look at? I dig through the backpack until I find my wallet. I take out my ID and stare at it. I'm okay. I notice my eyes first, because they look just like Jeanette's. But I feel like Jeanette might actually be a little prettier than me. Do you think we look more like Mom or Dad? I ask Jeanette. She kicks her feet up on the dash and says, Like Mom, thank God. I would die if I was born as pale as Dad. I sink into my seat a little with that answer. I was hoping we looked more like our dad, so when I see him in a little while, he'll feel a tiny bit familiar. I pick up the journal, wanting to distract myself from the fact that I remember nothing about the people who gave life to me. I flip to the very last day I wrote in my diary. It's probably the thing I should have read first, but I wanted some context. There are two entries for this day, so I start with the first one. Friday, October 3rd. Day your dog gets run over. Day father goes to prison. Day you have to move out of your childhood home and into a dump. Day your mother stops looking at you. Day your boyfriend punches someone's dad. All the shittiest days of my life. I don't even want to talk about it. By next week, everyone else will be, though. Everything just keeps getting worse. I am trying so hard to fix things, make them right, keep my family out of the gutter, even though that's exactly where we're heading. I feel like I'm swimming against this big wave and there's no way to win. People at school are looking at me differently. Silas says it's all in my head, but it's easier for him to believe that. He's the one with the father. His life is still intact. Maybe it's not fair of me to say this, but I get so mad when he tells me everything is going to be all right, because it's not. Clearly, it's not. He thinks his father is innocent. I do not. How can I be with someone whose family despises me? My dad isn't around for them to hate, so they transferred it all on me. My family made their precious family look bad. My dad is rotting in prison, while they walk around and carry on with their lives like he doesn't even matter. What they did to my family matters, and everything is not going to be all right. My dad hates Silas. How can I be with someone who is tied to the person who locked him up? It makes me feel so sick. Despite all of this, it's so hard for me to walk away from him. When I get angry, he says all the right things. But I know deep in my heart that this isn't good for either of us. Silas is so stubborn, though. Even if I tried to break up with him, he wouldn't let me. It's like a challenge to him. I act like I don't care. He acts like he doesn't care. I start cheating on him with his mortal enemy. He starts cheating on me with his mortal enemy's sister. He hears I'm at the diner with friends. He shows up with his friends. We're volatile together. We weren't always like this. It all started when everything came to a head with our fathers. Before that, if anyone would have told me I'd do everything I could to get rid of him one day, I would have laughed in their face. Who would have thought that our lives that fit so perfectly together would almost overnight become unrecognizable? Silas and Charlie's lives don't fit together anymore. It's too hard now. It's taking more effort than either of us is capable of. I don't want him to hate me. I just don't want him to love me anymore. So, I've been acting different. It's not that hard to act different, because I actually am different after all of this. But I've been letting him see it instead of hiding it. I'm mean. I didn't know I was capable of being this mean. And I'm distant. And I'm letting him see me flirt with other guys. A few hours ago, he punched Brian's dad when he overheard him tell another customer that I was Brian's girlfriend. I'm not sure we've ever gotten in that big of a fight before. I wanted him to yell at me. I wanted him to see me for what I really am. I wanted him to see that he can do so much better. Instead, right before they threw him out of the diner, he took a step toward me. He bent until his mouth was at my ear, and he whispered, "Why, Charlie? Why do you want me to hate you?" My sob caught in my throat as he was pulled away from me. He held my gaze as he was escorted outside. The look in his eye, it was one I've never seen before. It was full of indifference, as if he finally stopped having hope. And based on the text I just received from him before I began this journal entry, I think he's finally done fighting for us. His text said, "I'm on my way to your house. You owe me a proper breakup." He's finally fed up with it all. And we are over. Really over. And I should be glad, because this was my plan all along. But instead, I can't stop crying.
Chapter 4. Silas. Charlie has been extremely quiet as she reads. She's not taking notes or telling me anything that might be of use to us. At one point, I saw her swipe her hand under her eye, but if it was a tear, she hid it well. It made me curious what she was reading, so I peeked over and tried to read from the journal. It was from the night we broke up. What happened between us just a matter of a week or so ago. I want nothing more than to scoot over and read the rest of it with her, but instead, she tells Landon she has to pee. He pulls over at a gas station about an hour from the prison. Jeanette remains in the car, and Charlie sticks by my side as we enter the store. Or maybe it's me who sticks by her side. I'm not sure. The desire to protect her hasn't left me at all. If anything, I've become more involved. The fact that I remember everything from the last 2, almost 3 days has made it harder for me to forget that I'm not supposed to know her or love her. But all I can do is think about the kiss from this morning when we thought we weren't going to remember each other when it was over. The way she allowed me to kiss her and hold her until she wasn't Charlie anymore. It took all I had not to laugh when she pretended she knew her name. Delilah? Even without her memory, she's still the same stubborn Charlie. It's amazing how a few pieces of her personality still shine through today, just as they did last night. I wonder if I'm at all similar to who I was before all this started. I wait for her until she emerges from the restroom. We walk to the refrigerated cases of drinks, and I begin to reach for a water. She grabs at a Pepsi, and I almost catch myself telling her that I know she prefers Coke based on something I read in one of the letters yesterday, but I'm not supposed to remember yesterday. We take our drinks to the register and set them down. "I wonder if I even like Pepsi," she whispers. I laugh. "That's why I got water, playing it safe." She grabs a bag of potato chips from a display and places them on the counter for the cashier to scan. Then she grabs a bag of Cheetos, then a bag of Funyuns, then Doritos. She just keeps piling chips onto the counter. I'm eyeing her when she glances over at me with a shrug. "Just playing it safe," she says. By the time we return to the car, we're carrying 10 different bags of chips and 8 different types of sodas. Jeanette shoots Charlie a look when she sees all the food.
Silas is really hungry, she says to Jeanette.
Landon is seated behind the wheel, his knee bouncing up and down. He drums his fingers on the steering wheel and says, Silas, you remember how to drive, right? I follow his gaze and see two police cars pulled over on the side of the road in front of us. We'll have to pass them to get out, but I'm not sure why this is making Landon nervous. Charlie is no longer missing, so we have no reason to be paranoid of the police. Why can't you drive? I ask him. He turns around to face me. I just turned 16, he says. I only have a permit. I haven't applied for my license yet.
Great, Jeanette mutters.
In the grand scheme of things, driving without a license isn't really a priority on my list of things to worry about.
I think we have bigger issues than getting a ticket, Charlie says, voicing my thoughts aloud. Silas doesn't need to drive. He's helping me sort through all this shit.
Going through old love letters is hardly important, Jeanette says. If Landon gets a ticket with a permit, they'll deny his license.
Don't get pulled over then, I say to him. We still have another 2 hours to go and a 3-hour drive back. I can't waste 5 hours just because you're worried about your license.
Why are you two acting so weird? Jeanette says. And why are you reading old love letters? Charlie is staring down at the journal when she gives Jeanette a half-hearted response.
We're experiencing an unusual case of amnesia and can't remember who we are. I don't even know who you are. Turn around and mind your own business.
Jeanette rolls her eyes and huffs, then turns around. Weirdos, she mutters. Charlie grins at me and then points down at the journal.
Here, she says. I'm about to read the very last entry.
I move the box that separates us and I scoot closer to her so I can read the last entry with her.
Is it weird, sharing your journal with me?
She gives her head a slight shake.
Not really. I kind of feel like we aren't them.
Friday, October 3rd.
It's only been 15 minutes since I last wrote in this journal. As soon as I closed it, Silas texted me and said he was outside. Since my mother doesn't allow him in our house anymore, I walked outside to hear what he had to say. He caught my breath, and I instantly hated myself for it. The way he was leaning against his Land Rover, his feet crossed at the ankles, his hands shoved in his jacket pockets. A shiver ran over me, but I blamed it on the fact that I was in a pajama top with spaghetti straps. He wouldn't even look up when I walked to his car. I leaned against it next to him and folded my arms over my chest. We stood there for several moments, suspended in silence.
Can I just ask you one question? He said.
He kicked off his car and stood in front of me. I stiffened when his arms came up beside my head and caged me in. He dipped his head a couple of inches until we were eye to eye. The position we were in was nothing new. We'd stood like that a million times before, but this time he wasn't looking at me like he wanted to kiss me. This time he was looking at me like he was trying to figure out who in the hell I was. He was scrolling over my face like he was looking at a complete stranger.
Charlie, he said, his voice raspy.
He pulled his bottom lip in and bit down on it while he composed what he was about to say next. He sighed and then closed his eyes.
Are you sure this is what you want?
Yes. His eyes popped open at the steadfastness in my response. My heart ached for what he was trying to hide in his expression, the shock, the realization that he wasn't going to talk me out of it. He tapped his fist on the car twice and then shoved himself away from me. I immediately stepped around him, wanting to go inside my house while I still had the strength to let him leave. I kept reminding myself why I was doing this. We aren't a good match. He thinks my father is guilty. Our families hate each other. We're different now. When I reached my front door, Silas said one last thing before getting into his car.
I won't miss you, Charlie.
His comment shocked me, so I turned and looked at him.
I'll miss the old you. I'll miss the Charlie I fell in love with, but whoever this is you're turning into,
He waved his hand flippantly up and down my body. Is not someone I'm going to miss. He climbed inside his car and slammed his door. He backed out of the driveway and peeled away, his tires screeching against the streets of my slum neighborhood. And now he's gone. A small piece of me is angry that he didn't try harder. Most of me is relieved that it's finally over. All this time, he's done everything he can to remember how things used to be between us. He's convinced himself that they can be that way again one day. While he spends all of his time trying to remember, I spend all of my time trying to forget. I don't want to remember how it feels to kiss him. I don't want to remember how it feels to love him. I want to forget Silas Nash and everything in this world that reminds me of him.
Chapter 5. Charlie. The prison is not what I expected. And what was I expecting exactly? Something dark and rotting, set across a backdrop of gray skies and barren land. I don't remember what I look like, but I do remember what a prison should look like. I laugh as I climb out of the car and smooth out my clothes. The red brick is bright against the blue sky. There are flowers growing along the grass, dancing a little when the breeze hits them. The only thing ugly about this setting is the barbed wire that runs across the top of the fence. This doesn't look so bad, I say. Silas, who gets out behind me, raises an eyebrow.
You're not the one locked in there.
I feel warmth rise to my cheeks. I may not know who I am, but I do know that was an extremely stupid thing to say. Yeah, I say. I guess Charlie is an asshole. He laughs and grabs my hand before I can protest. I glance back at the car where Jeanette and Landon are watching us through the side windows. They look like sad little puppies. You should stay with them, I say. Teen pregnancy is a thing. He snickers. Are you kidding me? Did you not see how they fought the whole way here? Sexual tension, I sing, as I swing open the door to the main reception area. It smells like sweat. I crinkle my nose as I walk up to the window. A woman stands in front of me, a child tugging on each of her hands. She swears at them before barking her name at the receptionist and passing them her ID. Shit. How old did you even have to be to visit someone in this place? I fumble for my driver's license and wait my turn. Silas squeezes my hand, and I turn to smile weakly at him. Next, a voice calls. I step up to the window and tell a stern-faced woman who it is I'm here to see. Are you on the list? She asks. I nod. The letters indicated that I had been to visit my father several times since he was incarcerated. What about him? She nods towards Silas, who produces his driver's license. She pushes back his ID and shakes her head. He ain't on the list. Oh, I say. It takes her a few minutes to get everything into the computer, and then she hands me a visitor's badge. Leave your bag with your friend, she says. He can wait out here. I feel like screaming. I don't want to go in there alone and talk to some man who's supposed to be my father. Silas has his shit together. I want him to come with me. I don't know that I can do this, I say. I don't even know what to ask him. He grabs both of my shoulders and bends his head to look me in the eyes. Charlie, based on his manipulative letters, this guy seems like kind of an asshole. Don't buy into his charm. Get answers and get out, okay? I nod. Okay, I say. I look around the dingy waiting area, the yellow walls and painfully trying too hard potted plants. You'll be waiting out here?
Yeah,
he says softly. He's looking in my eyes, a slight grin on his lips. It's making me feel like he wants to kiss me, and it freaks me out. Stranger danger. Except I already know what it feels like to kiss him. I just can't remember. If it takes a while, you should go wait at the car with Landon and Jeanette, I say. You know, teen pregnancy and shit. He smiles reassuringly. Okay, I say, taking a step back. See you on the other side. I'm trying to look big and bad as I...